Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday again. I'm back now, and I'm here with Bentino Massaro. He is our satsang guest this week, and I know that some of you know him. In fact, I think probably the way I first came to know him is probably one or two of you told me to go have a peek. Probably the first person that said it, I didn't. That's the way it usually happens. And then somebody else probably said it very soon after, and so I went and had a peek. And the first time I had a peek at Bentino was quite a while ago. He wasn't even living in the United States yet. And then I remember he came to the United States, and he was living in North Carolina, which I kind of thought, oh, shoot, because I had just left North Carolina and came to Colorado. And then he came to Colorado. And so since then, I've had the opportunity to meet him and spend a little bit of time with him. Welcome, Bentino.
Thank you. Thank you.
So as we usually do during satsang, I will start just by asking questions. Whatever conversation happens, happens. But if any of you all have questions, there are two ways that you can ask your questions. One is you can put up your hand, and I will turn the mic over to you. He will be able to hear you. The other way is that you can type a question on the board. The only thing about typing a question on the board is that I may or may not see it, because I'm going back and forth from looking at the board and looking at Bentino. So sometimes things will scroll out of view without me seeing them. So the most sure way to ask your question is to take the mic. Bentino, there may be some people in the room who don't know who you are. So why don't we just start with a basic introduction? I know it can get a little boring. Yeah, already one person has written, I don't know who he is. So I know it can get a little boring telling your story over and over again. But why don't you just tell a little bit to give people an idea of who you are?
All right, so I'll give you the real quick version.
Perfect.
Condensed. Around the age of 15, I think, I rekindled this spark that I've always had as a kid that I sort of lost in high school, this spark of knowing, this inner conviction that everything is possible. And this inner conviction always made me a naturally joyful, giving, sharing, free child in spirit, a happy kid in that sense. But throughout high school, I sort of lost that, tried to fit in the sort of, you know, traditional standard things that happen in high school. But at the age of 15 or somewhere around that age, I just started to notice how I was unlike myself. Like, I memorized myself from when I was 12 or younger, and it just didn't match up with who I was at that point. And this sparked, like, pretty instantaneously, I just felt committed to resolve that, to not be caught up in the mainstream unconsciousness. And so I started to remember and live more again from that spark, and I started to seek materials that would confirm this and teach this accordingly. So I got into all kinds of stuff. Probably the most profound in terms of what gave me the most direction at that age was the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. And I joined yoga meditation philosophy teacher's training. At some point I went to India for half a year and just studied with different teachers, just read a lot of books, and just by being there, I hoped to find what I was looking for. And I did, in that sense. So that was the start of my awakening around the age of 18, or of my finding, where the struggle, the seeking itself started to stop, and it made room for more and more clarity, greater and greater joy and uncontrived happiness. And ever since, I've just been deepening and exploring and studying and transcending and integrating and teaching. And I've been doing that for about 8 years since.
Yeah, I have observed some of this deepening, and so I can stand witness to that. It's been a lot of fun to observe some of this. You said, when you were telling your story, you said that at one point you began to live from that spark, you know, that spark that was like what you used to be and now somehow had gotten lost. And there may be people listening that just even that little bit of what you said is exciting to them. They may have the question, you know, how do I start to live from that spark? Do you have something to share on that?
Yes, readiness or desire. I was tired already, even though it was only like 3 or 4 years of not being myself. I was tired of that. Like, I knew that had nothing in store for me. So in other word for desire is clarity in this case, because if you don't have clarity on the fact that it's not worth living your life in any other way but by being authentically yourself and living from the spark of knowing the infinite abundance of all that is and that everything is possible and that you are inseparable from existence itself. If there's no being tired of the alternative way of living in which most human beings seem to live, then there's no clarity as to what you do want. And so there's no desire, there's no passion. That fire of desire is not there to propel you into remembering, into actually living and embodying, counter all the things you've been taught, like opposing, sort of opposing, or rather transcending or transforming all the things that are part of your, so to speak, unconscious mind or your automatic conditioned mind. Not that this is a great battle against your conditioning, I don't want to put it that way, but there has to be the spark of desire, because otherwise you'll just keep doing what you're doing, and you'll just keep living as you have been living, and keep thinking as you have been thinking. So the most important thing is clarity. Are you desirous of a free life? Are you desirous of a passionate life? Are you desirous of being the truth that you are meant to be here? And if not, then it doesn't really matter what you do. It's not going to have any lasting effects. And if you do, then it doesn't really matter what you do anyway either, because if you do have that desire, you will succeed no matter what. So the clarity and the desire is key.
Yeah, you know, I've seen you before talking to people. You know, I can't remember if it was in person or if it was on like YouTube or somewhere, but I've seen you before talking to people about what are your desires, what do you want, and why don't you do that?
Yeah.
And I've heard
good summary.
Yeah. And I've heard some criticism of that. I think other people have seen that as well. And I think sometimes people perceive that as, you know, they'll say, oh, Bentino's teaching the law of attraction. And I personally haven't perceived it that way, but I've never talked to you about it. So do you want to talk a little bit about what that teaching is? What do you desire, and why don't you do that?
Sure. And just to put that into context, that is a portion of one of my three teachings. So it's definitely not all that I teach, and it's also not even the whole thing of the third teaching. So it's put in perspective. But the law of attraction, I don't call it that way. But the mechanics that people are familiar with through the law of attraction teachings are definitely a part of that third teaching, the third teaching which I call empowered consciousness. And so what would you like to know?
Well,
in this context?
I'll tell you what reminded me of it is, first of all, it is important that you mentioned it's the third of your three teachings, empowered consciousness. So why don't we stop for a moment before we go any further and go back? Can you share what the first and the second two teachings are in that little package?
Definitely. The first, I call enlightenment, which is about aware presence. It's about the discovery of the fact that when perhaps most easily noticeable is when we just relax our mind for 2 to 5 seconds. Just like right now, everyone can join. Just completely give up your right to be a victim, give up your right to have opinions, give up your right to think anything whatsoever for just 2 to 5 seconds. It's a great gift. Take a deep breath, relax, and give up your right to have any thoughts that are yours. Thoughts may arise, but they're not yours. No claimership, no ownership. Just like being. And in those 2 to 5 seconds, that window of opportunity, you recognize that there is a consciousness, there's a vividness, there's a presence that remains. So, in other words, your existence exists no matter what, even when you're not thinking. And when we keep inducing those 2 to 5 seconds, and I usually say try to do that 12 times a day, at least, or around 12 times a day, I've taken 2 to 5 seconds. And in that window, again, recognize that there is a clarity, there's a consciousness, there's a presence, there's an aware sense of presence that is there, even when you don't have any thoughts or when you disown your thoughts or when you're not caught up in thinking. So consciousness remains, presence remains, life remains. And this is a very simple summary of discovering what we could call enlightenment and what's usually pointed to as enlightenment is that quote-unquote greater self, that greater presence that is always here no matter what we do, no matter what we think, no matter what we've done, no matter what we don't do, no matter what we don't think, regardless of our thoughts, our feelings and emotions and sensations and even physical death as can be experienced or explored as well. Regardless of all of these phenomena that appear and disappear, there is a presence that remains. And we could call that beingness, we could call that aware presence, we could call it simply awareness. But that is the first teaching, is all aimed to explore that we can simply let our emotions and thoughts be as they are and discover their substratum, their essence, their basic, the basic space within which they appear and disappear. Just by taking these moments 12 times a day, we become really familiar with it. We become really convinced of it. And it is through becoming convinced of the fact that our existence, that pure, crystal, clear presence, which is here right now, is always here right now. We become really convinced of that. And as we become more convinced of the fact that this beingness is always already here, regardless of the appearances and disappearances of phenomena, we start to shift our identity from the sense of I am this, for example, I am this body inside of a world, to the sense of I am, or I am existent, I exist. Just purely staying with the sense I exist, for example, is a good way also to clear away the mind for a moment and come to a more profound recognition of the fact that we as existence always already exist, no matter what appears or disappears. So this gives rise to a basic sense of stability and profound ease that can be brought with us, or that is already the case, in fact, throughout all experiences. So we could just, generally speaking, call this enlightenment. Any questions on that before I explain the second teaching?
Not from me. Let me check the others. Any questions, anyone? I see no questions at this point, so why don't we go on to the second teaching?
Beautiful. And feel free to ask in retrospect, too.
I will.
Awesome. So the second teaching is, I call that infinity. Before I called that beyond experiencing. I've just simplified the names a little bit. So it's enlightenment, infinity, and empowerment is the third. So the second teaching is infinity, or beyond experiencing, or beyond consciousness, which I think usually the best way to explain this one, because it's so sort of mysterious and abstract and out there, is through simply sharing my personal experience of how that sort of came about for myself. So this was all that I taught. This first thing was basically all that I taught. And I always wanted to keep my teachings really accessible, really available, really simple, really just sort of like one trick pony kind of thing, because I didn't want to cause more seeking and confusion for people, right?
I remember, yes.
So I didn't want to sort of undermine that principle, which was something that I was known for, that simplicity, that accessibility. And it was something that I strived for, that I wanted to, you know, bring about in people that sense of simplicity, that they're already perfect as they are, not like causing more seeking and more philosophy and more thinking, but to keep it really simple and to have them profoundly discover their freedom right here, right now. So I was almost, you could say, a little insistent upon that, or desirous of keeping it that way. But since life is always paradoxical and expanding and ironic in that sense, it challenged me, because at some point, this wasn't the end-all be-all for me anymore, this aware presence, this greater self, this presence of I am, or even the I, which is simply awareness, aware of awareness, not even aware of its presence as a emness, as a beingness, but simply space, sky-like awareness, aware of awareness. But what happened is that the sense of presence, the sense of presence energy, which is that beingness that makes up all of creation, which is the essence that all forms rest within, that all forms reside within, that all forms consist of, all appearances have as their essence this isness, this presence energy, as I call it. Or we could simply call that creation itself, or presence itself. And what happened for me personally is that at some point, this this beingness, the fact that I exist, started to become tiring to me. Sure. Even though that the fact that I exist was freed up from the sense I am this, or I am separate, or I am just an individual inside of an external world. Even though that was no longer the case for me, even though that was no longer my level of identity, and it had shifted to I am and I, or in other words, awareness aware of the sense of presence or beingness, and awareness aware of the sense of being aware. So that had become my main sense, my main conviction of who I am, or what I am, or what is true. And so everything else in life just sort of already appeared as beautiful sky-like appearances that come and go. And so I wasn't really attached anymore, as most people are in the conventional sense. But what happened is that even this liberated sense of presence itself started to become tiring to me, started to gnaw at me somehow. And this was kind of a weird phenomenon because I had never heard anyone speak of it in this way. It was always enlightenment, awareness, presence, be present, notice what's already here, and voila, that's it, you're enlightened. And now suddenly, after having been familiar with that for a couple of years or so, it started to, I don't know how to describe it exactly, but
it started to expand itself.
Right. Aware presence itself started to appear to me as an object.
Yeah.
Instead of it, as it's normally described, which is the substratum of all objects, and therefore the formless presence itself, the beingness itself. But beingness itself started to appear to me as if it was an appearance itself, meaning that the entirety of creation, isness, consciousness, the substratum of all that is, that itself started to sort of turn into this sphere or this bubble that popped out of my brain or that popped out of my beingness. And now suddenly this whole of creation or isness appeared or was felt as if it was an appearance in front of me. And so one of the things that confirmed this for me, or that gave myself permission to like really let go in this and accept, okay, this is happening to me, whatever this is, and it is sort of undermining my previous teachings, and it is undermining everything that I was convinced of. One of the things that gave me the greatest degree, or that was sort of that shifting moment of, okay, like I just have to surrender to this because there's no sense in like trying to keep your teaching a certain way because you think it helps people the best or anything like that. So it was this sentence I read in a book by Nisargadatta, and he said the truth or something like that, like whatever you are is beyond consciousness. And in that moment, I did not take that as beyond personal consciousness into greater consciousness. I took that consciousness as the entirety of consciousness, yeah. Consciousness itself or awareness itself. And so to have that confirmed, because I didn't find any confirmation anywhere, like by any other teacher or teaching. And so, at least not at the time. And then when I read this sentence, it just felt like a confirmation for me that allowed my sort of human self to let go of the insistence to keep my teaching and my sense of self a certain way. And so I just let it be, I let it happen, and I started to be experience a great degree of mystery and bliss in that sense, transcending consciousness or realizing that awareness or consciousness or presence is not actually the absolute. I started to really see that consciousness itself has an isness to it. And if something has an isness to it, it is present. If something is present, it must have a creator. Something must have put it there. Something must have made it present. Something must have created it at some point. If something has an isness, it means it's created. If it's created, it means it's not the creator, it's the created. So presence, consciousness has an isness, and we can tune into this. We relax our mind. We become really present to presence, isness, awareness. And we start focusing on the fact that it is. Just the fact that awareness or presence is present. It's present. It's present. And we can then also see that it is created. Because it's here. It's appearing right here. It's created as a sense of presence, of beingness. The absolute cannot be finite. And presence is a finite concept. It has to be present. Beingness is a finite concept. It has to be. If the absolute is truly infinite, which it is, it doesn't have a notion of being or no being, of presence or no presence. It has to be even beyond isness or presence or creation itself. And so we can play with that threshold of being on the edge of consciousness, peeking into the black hole, into infinity. The black hole is then a representation of the substratum or the sphere or the bubble of consciousness being pierced, being penetrated, being popped by the question mark that asks itself, what is beyond me as existence? What is beyond consciousness? What is beyond that which is? That question mark sort of has a sharp point at the end, and it pierces a hole in that illusory substratum or in the bottom of consciousness, in the sphere or the edge of presence, isn't it? And so when that occurred to me, that was greatly liberating, because now I could give myself permission to not have to be present. Not that that was a thing I was doing, it was something that was simply there. But now I noticed I even have the choice to look away from presence, from beingness. And then there is an even greater, I wouldn't call it beingness per se, but there is an even greater sense of liberation, an even more infinite sense of freedom. And the sense that comes with it is sort of along the lines of, nothing ever happened to me at this level of my being, or non-being, whatever you are, beyond beingness and non-being altogether. Nothing ever occurred to me. Nothing ever happened to me as this. To infinity, none of creation ever occurred, in a sense. Now, this is not necessarily entirely accurate, philosophically speaking or theologically speaking, but it is the sense that comes with it. It's sort of that very personal, intimate experience that consciousness then has of its own experiences when it realizes, when it's humbled by the fact that it's not the absolute. When awareness, which is the core of all identity, realizes that it's not the absolute, is this infinitely humbling black hole of losing all sense of identity, or all insistence upon identity, or upon I am, or I am this, or I am, or I even. And so we could simply say this is beyond I altogether, beyond the big I. This is infinity. Infinity has no finite concept. That's the second teaching in a nutshell. So think I'm teaching law of attraction.
No, well, first of all, no. First, I knew better, because I actually, I remember when you moved into that. I remember very, very, very clearly, and that was because at the same time I was having a year of silence here, and I was moving into some of the same things, and you were sharing them, and I was so excited, because I would have this realization, and I would write it, and then I would go onto Facebook, and you were writing the exact same thing, and I was just like, oh my God, this is maybe when I went from mild interest to madly in love, because it was such a joy to have someone writing the same thing. But this is also, as you will well remember, when everyone started saying you were insane, you'd lost it, you'd gone crazy.
Yeah, that was fun.
You were kicked out a couple of Facebook groups. And then when I would say, oh, but I'm seeing the same thing next, I was kicked out. So it was a fun time.
You got a lot of controversy.
Yeah, a lot of controversy was happening. But let's go to the third teaching then. So from this, you know, I call it, I won't tell you what I call it. I will stop right there. You could tell me about the third teaching.
Beautiful. Well, thank you. That is empowerment. And so what one is left with when one realizes, also maybe a quick note up front, this, it does not mean necessarily anyone has to go through these teachings in that order, 1, 2, 3. I just named them as such because that's the order in which they became most prominent to me. But for some people, it's just relevant to, like, hear the third teaching. For some people, it's just relevant to hear the second. For some people, it's just relevant to hear the first, at least for one period at a time, and that does not have to be ordered as I ordered it, 1, 2, 3. So with that in mind, every one of these teachings, in a sense, stands on its own as well, although the most beautiful and the most sort of advanced stage in that sense is that of true simultaneity, where all these three levels of existence are completely transparent to each other, and one can move one's attention from one to the other depending on what feels most relevant in the moment. So the third teaching, that of empowerment, works with the individual, but now not as an as some teachers would call it, an ego personality, but more as an inseparable, super connected creature of existence, inseparable from all that is. And so we start to explore what the purpose is of individuality, of multiplicity, of the illusion of manyness, which is a finite concept, and it is all happening within the sphere of presence consciousness. and it is ultimately illusory. Nevertheless, why is it here? Because infinity does not make any mistakes. So why are we here? Why do I wear this body at this time, with these skills, with these talents, with these disabilities, with these challenges, with these desires? Why do I wear this suit? Why do I wear this mind? Why was I born in the country I was born in? Why do I live where I live now, etc.? So not to get too, like, intellectual about it, but we explore. In the third teaching, we investigate, we explore, we bring to clarity the unconscious, we make the unconscious conscious, and we start to penetrate the veil of forgetfulness, which is something that we place upon ourselves upon birth, so that we could have a certain limited experience of life from a particular point of view, and not remember all that we are and why we are, so that we truly have, in that sense, free will from a limited point of view, so that we can explore in a very free way as free agents of the One, or of infinity. I call infinity the One sometimes. So the purpose of this individuated life is to be an expression of infinity in your own very unique way, in your own unique theme of exploration. So to embrace that is important, because if we do not, then on the level of experiencing, in a sense, shit hits the fan, or blockages start to appear, and ineffective ways are developed. Like, we start to make ineffective use of our catalyst, and catalyst is simply experiences that offer us challenge, that offer us teaching, that offer us learning, that offer us more expression of infinity. When we block ourselves or ignore the individuation side, I wouldn't even call it the personal side so much as I would call it the individuation side, because my experience of the individual is very, it cannot be called personal anymore, but it's still very individual as well as infinite and impersonal. So it's very intimately individual, but it's not personal as we know it. Like, I don't have a personality as what we would call a personality. That's completely emptied out, and so the function becomes different, but the individuation of existence still exists, still endures, still expresses, but now as an inseparable part of infinity and of it, infinity's expression, which is creation or presence energy, with all of its forms and all of its dimensions and all of its levels and all of its beings and human beings. So the third teaching deals with everything under the sun that can be called evolution of consciousness, expansion of consciousness, bliss, following your passion, following your joy, manifesting your reality, learning from your manifested reality, fine-tuning your alignment with who you truly are desiring yourself to be, getting to know your quote-unquote higher self, and becoming a more intuitive, more effective creature at being alive, basically. And that is not contradictory to non-duality or unity or oneness in any way. In fact, one has to ask oneself this very important question if one is one of those that really idolizes non-duality or oneness over individuality. And if you are such a listener, then please ask yourself or consider the following, which is that the One does not need the One. Infinity does not need you to recognize it. Endlessness, endless infinity does not need you to recognize it, does not need the human being to constantly be in a state of absorption in that. It doesn't need you. It already has that at its own level. Infinity already knows it's infinite. Yes, it utilizes you as a shard of the mirror of creation to see itself reflected in from different points of view, different new unique angles. Nevertheless, equally as important as reflecting back to the One that it is the One, which is another way of saying to meditate upon unity or to recognize what's always already here, to become more non-dual in that sense, to become more non-separate, to transcend the idea of being a separate personal self. That is great. That is absolutely helpful. And yet, if that is all we worship, and we worship it at the expense of individuality, what happens is that we forget one very, very important thing, which is that infinity wants nothing more but to be at the cutting edge of creation, because that's what's new to it. Timelessness is not new to timelessness. That may be new to you as a personal self. Oh, joy, timelessness. Oh, wow, I'm so free. Look at me. But to infinity or timelessness on its own level, it doesn't give a shit. It doesn't care at all, because it's already non-dual from beyond time. It doesn't need timelessness. It doesn't need you to reiterate that teaching. It doesn't need you to reestablish yourself as the One. Trust me, the one is already the one, no matter what you do or don't do. Where it's most interested in, ironically so, even though the seeker is most interested in the one is most interested in the seeker. The one is most interested in this right now, this conversation, because this conversation, although in potentiation, has already taken place from beyond time, it is now happening from a new point of view. It's now happening. It's now building a new relationship to itself. And so where the one is really interested in is in its own expansion, in expanding its creation, in expanding its representation of itself. Because in the beginning, there was just the one. There was no awareness, there was no presence, there was no creation, there was no love, there was no light. But then from infinity, pure infinity, it started to, in a sense, cause this friction, meaning a desire to know itself. And so awareness or free will, free agency came into being, which carries with it the infinite intelligence of infinity, but it's made actionable. It's in actionable form. Awareness is infinity in a workable form, even though it's formless itself and it's timeless itself. The very first distortion or expression of the one, infinite one, is intelligence. With it as its source, infinity. And so we could call that infinite intelligence, in a sense. Or infinite awareness, or infinite free agency. Now this free agency, in order to express infinity, which is its sole purpose, its sole duty, its sole honor, its sole desire, is to express infinity in experience, in an experienceable format. Now the closest way it can get to doing this is to create as many things as it possibly can. Anything that can be created, therefore will be created, or is already created. Because creation has to approach infinity. It can never become infinity on its own original level. It can only express infinity to the best of its ability. And in order for experiences to reflect infinity, there needs to be as many experiences as infinite intelligence can come up with. And so in order to establish this, it created its first thought, if you will, its first principle, which is that of unconditional love, which we can tap into as the I am, or we can tap into as the presence energy that is that formless field which holds all of creation, which is unconditionally forgiving, unconditionally accepting, unconditionally observing and supportive of whatever creation is created. It does not blink at light nor dark. It does not blink at positive nor negative. It's this unconditional field of formless love, from which then this infinite intelligence of the free agency that we call awareness starts working its magic on this infinite field of potential that we call unconditional love. And it created light in all of its forms so that experiences in all of its forms could occur, could become visible, could become experiential. Until we end up, quote unquote, until we end up with all that we have now and so much more that we're unaware of as humans. And so there is this full spectrum of creation that is meant and that desires to return to the source, but not only to return to source, but simultaneously also to move away from source. Not really, obviously, but the moving away symbolizes expressing source, expanding in its sole duty, its sole honor, its sole desire, which is to express infinity. And you cannot adequately do your job if all you think about is returning to source. If that makes sense.
It makes sense.
In a sense, there's that balance, that both-way balance of, yes, returning to source, yes, becoming more transparent to the infinite one, and yet at the same time also expanding. It's one movement that seems to occur in two different directions, back and forward, inwards and outward. But really, it's the same desirous impulse, which is sort of like a spiritual gravity that every single cell has. In fact, it's this gravity that makes everything work and spin and create patterns. It's the gravity of wanting to return to the one while at the same time expressing more of it in more infinite ways.
We have a question.
Yes.
All right. It's something you said a few minutes ago, so I'll be taking you back. You said that this conversation has already taken place beyond time. We have a question. What do you mean when you say this conversation has already taken place beyond time?
What I mean is that, structurally speaking, everything that can exist already exists. Because to that original free agency, which we could call free awareness, which is the first expression of infinity, it's infinity in a workable, intelligent format, which is already a finite concept. That's why it cannot do it itself. It needs to create awareness. And so awareness is that first intelligence Now, this intelligence is beyond time. In fact, there is no time yet at this point because, or at this level, which is simultaneously to now. It didn't just exist before creation. It exists simultaneous with creation. And from its own level, it's always before creation, in a sense. So we have to be really abstract in our thinking here because this is very nonlinear. It's very timeless. So this awareness is beyond time. Just imagine for a moment that time and creation has not yet been created. All that exists is infinity that is now aware, and it has a freedom to choose what to do with that, what to create from that, where to go from that. And so from this super free state, which is, I describe that as the I, awareness, aware of awareness, the I, aware of I, this free state of awareness, this original free awareness, then from this timeless phase, starts creating all these experiences, but this happens, or this is created in a sense, all simultaneously, because again, there is no time, and anything that can be created is already created. So at this point, all of creation is already manifest. Whatever will ever happen, can ever happen, already coexists within the same eternal now of the field of unconditional love. And so this conversation, in that sense, has already taken place. But the relationship to it, the order in which this has occurred, is unique. So creation doesn't necessarily expand itself anymore, structurally speaking. And by structurally speaking, I mean the experiences that can occur, or the appearances, the phenomena within presence consciousness that could ever potentially be created. All the possible configurations of energy that infinite intelligence can come up with have already been created. They already coexist. Past, future, alternate, parallel realities, they all coexist within the same zero-point timeless moment of the now. That being said, how creation does expand upon its self-reflection and its self-expression and its expression of infinity is by building new relationships within this field of infinite dots. Remember as a kid when you had those empty pages that just had numbered dots on them, and you started at 1, then you went to 2, then to 3, and you had no idea where this would take you. You had no idea what form or shape it would take. But as you went through those steps and you started following that breadcrumb trail moment by moment without expectation, finally at the very end of it, connecting the last dot, you had a creation, you had a picture in front of you. And so you could see what it was. Now, very similarly, if you imagine all of creation as simply consisting of infinite different configurations of energy or patterns or manifestations, every atom can be in a slightly different configuration. Now, imagine infinite ways for that to do, for that to be. See that sort of like those dots. There's an infinite vast field of infinite dots. Those dots already exist. You can go to the furthest dot, not that there is such a thing because it is infinite, but you can go left, you can go right, you can go under, you can go up, you can go to the bigger dot, to the smaller dot. All the dots, all the potential configurations of energy already exist. What makes this a new experience, what makes this a valuable experience for infinity to express itself through, is not what it can create, but how it relates to that creation and where it will go from this point. Because infinite points allow for infinite orders in which to move through them.
Right.
And we also have infinite beings. So it's infinity times infinity times infinity, and voila, we have creation. And so all these points already exist, timelessly so, but which one you experience as your present appearance, as your present experience, is dictated by what is relevant for you, and this is where the higher self theory comes in a little bit, or the higher consciousness. It will choose what is relevant for it to experience at this moment, but from its own level, it's perceiving many, many dots at the same time, many lives at the same time, and it sees that future and past all happen once at once. In fact, every single thing that could ever potentially be is happening right now. Just ponder that for a moment. Every possible configuration of creation, every possible expression of infinity that could ever be thought up, ever, that includes hundreds of billions of years from now, by the most intelligent species to ever have lived, whatever can be thought up by them already exists right now, simultaneous to this moment. What makes us aware of this moment in this moment, what makes us aware of this moment, this appearance in this moment, is our consciousness, especially our lower consciousness, is sort of like a flashlight or like a yeah, let's just imagine a flashlight. And this flashlight only has this limited view at any one given period of time. And so we only perceive so many dots every second, so many frames every second. But there's infinite frames that all coexist within the same zero-point field of space, timelessness, spacelessness and timelessness, dimensionlessness. All dimensions exist within the dimensionless point of zero, of infinity. And so what makes us experience this one at this time is because this is relevant for us at this particular moment. And so every individuation of the all that is consciousness creates its own timeline between these points. So again, like a kid, you would go from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, except for creation and the expansion of it, there is no numbers. You can go from any dot to any other dot depending on what's relevant for what you want to experience. And the unique desires way in which your higher self wants to express infinity and perform its duty and its honor of being an expression of infinity. So we're having this dialogue right now, but it already happened 10 years ago. It didn't happen 10 years ago. It's happening now. Everything is happening now. 10 years ago is happening now.
I understand. So you know what? I think we're ready to go back. Back to, so when someone is in front of you, and I'm going to pretend for a moment if you don't mind. I'm going to be the type of person that sometimes comes to satsang. And, you know, I'm going to say, you know, for the most part, I'm a happy person, but, you know, I'm not happy because I'm not in a relationship. And, you know, it really bugs me that I'm not in a relationship. I try to meet people and I'm not successful. At the same time, I feel guilty because I know that I should only want God and I want a relationship. What has Bentino did with that?
I'm hearing an echo right now, just so you know. I'm hearing my own voice.
Okay.
So maybe your speaker is still on, I don't know, for the recording.
I'll turn it down.
Awesome. Yes. So depending on, like, why this is slightly, it's not challenging, but why this is slightly more elusive to do this right now is because you're not that person.
True.
And so every teaching is tailored to that person asking the question.
Understood.
So depending on your energy field in that moment or the questioner's energy field in that moment, I would either take that question in a more, or direct their attention into a more absolute point of view of existence, or I would simply deal with it on the level of their relative experiences and explain to them why they are attracting such circumstances and why they seem unsuccessful in attracting a relationship that works for them, and clarify it in that sense. And as we clarify that, they also tend to become more transparent naturally to the deeper levels of consciousness, to that deeper sense of ease and bliss and timelessness and I don't need anything and all that. So it's very complementary. All these three teachings are very much indivisible at some point. Hypothetically, I find it really hard right now to answer question, actually, because it would just be hypothetical.
Let me retract it. I understand perfectly. Let me retract it and ask a different question then, okay?
Awesome.
What is the difference between the confused state of mind I imitated a moment ago, all right, and the desires that are coming from infinity wanting to express itself?
Beautiful.
Okay.
In other words, what is the difference between a personalized bias or preference and a true resonant desire that's coming from the higher self in a sense?
And how would one know? How would one know?
And how would one know the
difference? When it's a desire that maybe I should be looking at and kind of letting go because it's really just in my way, and when it is my way. The difference between what's in my way and what is my way.
Okay. And there's a very profound, simple, sort of simple, I mean it requires some attention, a very simple way to discover what is your true resonance and what is simply negatively defined experiences that you wish to counter with experiences you've defined as their anti-self or their opposite, their pleasurable experiences. So to sort of transcend this game of being caught up by your own mind's definitions of what's negative and positive and craving the positive and wanting to avoid the negative.
Yes.
And to come through a truly balanced state of clarity where there's a balance of love and wisdom and there's a passion that comes from a sense of higher alignment and resonance. A true desire, which should not be eliminated or ignored for the sake of non-duality, but should be honored as inclusive of, because it expresses infinity in the most direct, immediate, effective, and effortless way. How to tell the difference between these two, the state of confusion and the state of clear desire, or true passion, or true inspiration, is by asking oneself, what would I desire in this circumstance if I had no lack beliefs whatsoever? In other words, if I did not believe lack of existence could occur to me, in other words, fear of death, if death could not occur to me, I could never die, no matter what I did. Lack of existence could not occur. Lack of love could not occur. I'm so loved, no matter what I do, no matter how much I fuck up, no matter how much I mess up, there is no lack of love. Everyone always loves me. I always love myself. God always loves me. Existence always loves me. There is no sin. I cannot make a mistake. I cannot go wrong. There is no lack of finances. There is no lack of resources to do what I want to do. There is no lack of any personal satisfaction. I can tap into any satisfaction I need or desire at any given moment. I don't lack that if it's not coming from someone else. I don't need it from anyone else. I am completely 100% satisfied and abundant within my own well-being. Like ecstatically so, explosively, blissfully so. And in that expanded state, if you imagine that, ask yourself, what of my desires remains? What comes naturally from that state? And you'll see that, and this is generalizing, so don't take this as an individual basis, but usually it's a combination of wanting to express love light and wanting to experience more of love light. And by love light, I mean the unconditionally loving substratum or the original vibration of existence, of creation. Wanting to get closer to that frequency in one's own personal vibration. Wanting to become a more clarified beacon or transmitter or instrument or conduit of that energy of unconditional love and light and clarity. So both wanting to experience more of that bliss as well as wanting to share more of that bliss. Now this can come in many forms. This can be inspired by getting a big house that allows you to have lots of visitors over, and those that come into town can stay with you whenever they want to. It can be to drive the car you desire because it makes you feel even more anchored in your free self. It really resonates with you. Every time you step into that car, you feel supported to share with the world your authentic self. It just is a natural materialistic reflection of your true desire. It can come in these forms. However, it will always at the core, at the foundation, be a form of, I wish to become more of the unconditional love light frequency of existence, transparent to unity, transparent to the one, to the infinite one. And at the same time, simultaneously, I wish for other people to know that too, if they so choose out of their own free will. So it will always be a combination of that. Or it tends to be a combination of that. Now, it may come in any kind of form, so it may be hard to sometimes recognize it as coming from there. But I have found that in all the people I've asked this question to, they all say love, they all say joy, they all say freedom, they all say bliss, they all say do-do-do. So then the desires start to shift more to qualities, like fundamental qualities or principles of existence, becoming a more godlike being or more saint-like being, and not out of an egotistical desire, but simply as a natural effect of having imagined there to be no lack. And therefore, the ego self or the biased self or the preference-based creature only comes from having ever adopted the idea that lack could potentially occur in your future to begin with.
Yes.
It's the only single source of human suffering I've ever found. You can trace back any contraction you've ever had back to the idea that you believe lack could occur to you.
Yes.
There is no other root cause. Ego is not the root cause. Ego is the result of believing in a thought that suggests lack can exist. And here's the thing. Existence can support any potential reality. The only thing it does not compute with is lack. So for us humans to have collectively 7 billion of us believed in the only thing that cannot exist is why we are as we are as a species, or why we are as we have been. We are rapidly moving out of that age. Nevertheless, as you look back upon history, you can see that we're not very effective in many ways. And not very harmonious, but it all comes from at large believing lack exists or can occur to us. And therefore we create a needy state. And in a needy state, you need a substitute servant because you become a victim, or you believe you are a victim, and you stop taking care of yourself consciously and vibrationally. And when you stop taking care and supporting your own self vibrationally and harmoniously and consciously, you need a substitute servant to take care of you. And that is what we call the ego effect, or the mind in that sense. But without the belief in lack can exist, there is no ego effect in that sense. There's no negative ego effect.
Yes. I understand Perfectly, actually.
Beautiful. That's great.
And I think this is why I love listening, is because of the resonance. And what's happening for me, which is a little bit of a challenge considering my role right now, is that you're leaving me with no questions. So
that's good.
It is good, except that
a lack of questions.
Yeah.
An abundance of open space.
And yes, an understanding.
Perhaps I can, if there is no question for people at this point.
There is.
Okay.
There is not.
Oh, there's not. Okay. Yeah. Then let me go a little bit into this concept of lack, which is sort of the foundation around which my third teaching is built.
Right.
So again, law of attraction, it's just a portion of that. It's just an expression of that. And it's a very natural part of who we are. And so it shouldn't be denied, but it's not a focal point. It's just a natural result. But the core, the more core principle of my third teaching is to go from a being that believes in lack to a being that sees the infinite abundance of this moment, that all things coexist at this time, that there's never a lack of anything, that there's just a choice to move from one dot to the other dot. And not every dot contains every other dot within the level of appearances, but every dot does, universally speaking, metaphysically speaking, contain every other dot in the universe. There's no point in existence that does not contain all the rest of existence. So all of existence comes together right now in this 0 point moment of your present experience. However, that's an unseen world that's not visible to our brain cells, etc. Nevertheless, that becomes more and more your experience, that there's never a lack of anything. Anything that ever happened still happens. Anything that will ever happen is also happening still here and now. So in that most absolute sense, there is no lack of any experience within the presence of creation. But even on a more relative scale, which is very helpful too when it comes to this third level of freeing up the individual to become this crystalline, pure, brilliant, bright expression, this diamond expression of infinity, in its own unique way, as it's designed to be, as it intends to be, was very helpful to become more crystallized, to become more free, to become more unblocked, is to realize on a very relative level that lack has never occurred to you. So this is about redefining how you see things. It's about seeing things from a new point of view, not the old point of view that's conditioned by all of society, but a new point of view that's fresher, that comes more from a higher self point of view, that's in greater vibrational alignment with the way your higher self sees existence. And the result of that is bliss. Because when your personal, quote-unquote personal, or your individual vibration, your vibrational attitude is in alignment with your higher self attitude or vibration, it syncs up, and what you experience is bliss. What you experience is joy and expansion. Whereas if your personal or individual vibration moves away from that sort of, from that way of seeing life, from that way of understanding life, we experience contraction, we experience negativity, we experience suffering, all that sense of lack. So basically the whole spiritual surge on the level, within the level of the conscious evolution of an individual, is all about lessening the distortion between the personal vibration and the higher self vibration. And so one of the ways to do that, one of the most effective direct ways, non-confusing ways in my experience to do that, is to see that every single contraction of suffering you've ever had can be traced back to the idea that, oh, lack is about to occur to me in some form. A lack of love, a lack of free will, a lack of what I desire, a lack of the person that I love, etc. A lack of existence. When you see, when you trace back over and over and over again, and it becomes easier and more obvious and more instantaneous over time. This is a practice, after all. So the more every time that you feel a contraction or a suffering or a worry of any kind, you see that it leads back to the idea that lack is about to occur if you don't do this, if you don't do that, if you don't think this, etc. Then that starts to free up that shell around the heart, that shell around the resonance chamber, so to speak. And so then as we unlock that over and over again by noticing what the belief is, for example, one example that you use, the relationship one?
Yeah, the example was, I really want a relationship, and yet I feel guilty for wanting a relationship.
Oh, yes. So I really want a relationship, but I feel guilty for wanting a relationship. What is that guilt thing? Is the idea that if I desire a relationship, and especially if I manage to get it, then that will imply lack in some form. It may imply the lack of love, of God's love for me.
Yeah, I feel God, maybe. Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe lack of something else. And if you see that this is all a man-made story, this idea of lack, mm-hmm. and that none of the universe computes with this except civilizations like ourselves, we live in this own isolated bubble of pretending something exists that is the only thing that can never exist, which is lack. When you start seeing that it's a man-made contraption, it's not God's word, it's not truth, it is the furthest away from truth, it's the antichrist in that sense, it's the anti-thought, the idea that lack exists. When you see this over and over and over again, it becomes very hard to believe in that idea at some point. And more automatically, you'll be freer. More automatically, you'll be more expanded. More automatically, you'll be more that crystallized version of yourself that is a pure conduit for that higher love light energy, which you wish to experience more of, move closer into, and be a beacon of to quote-unquote others. So notice that there is a contraction. Notice that there is a pain or a suffering or some kind of an idea in your mind that makes you feel nasty, makes you feel like you're lacking. Identify the belief as clearly as you can, or the thought that you believe in, whatever that may be. For example, if I enter this relationship, God will not love me anymore. In other words, a lack of God's love if I desire a relationship. See that that's a man-made story. God did not come up with that for you. He is way too busy doing more valuable stuff than thinking in circles. So you pinpoint the idea and then you transform it either through seeing how ridiculous it is until you start compassionately laughing like you just did, which is freeing, which is transcendence right there. It's transformation of the belief into seeing the truth of abundance. And another way is to ask yourself a question. For example, like if you don't feel like it's this easily resolved, like, you spot the idea and you feel totally free from it and you feel like laughing and you say, that was a silly thought that I come up with. If even upon finding out what idea it is that contracted you, if you still feel tied to it, if you still feel attached to it, if it still feels to have some reality for you and you don't feel free from it, then ask yourself, what is the worst thing that could happen if I didn't go in this direction that I desire, yet I believe lack will occur to me if I do? What would be the worst thing that could happen to me? And would there be no way out whatsoever? And you will always see that, A, it's not that bad, and it's unlikely that the worst thing will happen. And if it does happen, do you not have any tools or means to get out of that situation? This is just sort of a relative way to ease your mind, to ease that belief into a greater openness so that you can see it as greater hilarity, as more of a funny idea rather than a truth. But really just what it's about is at some point you just start to see the abundance of existence in the face of that thought. So let's say you find that limiting thought, for example, God will not love me if I want this relationship or if I enter this relationship. See if that's true. Just like hold that attention span for a moment, that openness, that space of open love, open awareness. As the thought, I will lack this or that occurs. And see that in the spaciousness of presence, and in the abundance of all that's around you, realizing that this is just one parallel frame inside of the same moment containing all infinite potential realities that you can always tune into vibrationally using imagination and vibrational attitude and conviction. Is there really such a thing as lack of love or lack of getting what I desire? And you will see in the clarity of being tuned into the abundance that is the truth of creation, that is not true. And so you hold these two next to each other until you see that one is man-made and the other is a universal principle. And the universal principle obviously always wins in that sense, always transforms and consumes the more optional, more temporarily created, man-made, socially induced idea. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, we do something similar. We call it root cause inquiry, looking at the root cause of the upset. You know,
exactly. Beautiful.
Yes, yes. I don't know if everybody in the room knows about it, but there are certainly people here in the room that do. So, like I said, I have a lack of questions. And the lack of questions, again, is coming from the intense resonance, because when the intense resonance happens, it results in a stillness.
Beautiful.
And so I'm looking at notes now, things I wrote down before, and looking for a question.
Actually, I want to hit on one more point that you brought up when you said there's a lack of questions.
Yes.
So just for a way for people, because I can sense some minds going, yeah, but lack has occurred to me in the past. Like really, lack has occurred as an experience in the past. And my answer to that is fundamentally, no, it has never occurred to you. But that cannot always be immediately, that's not always immediately seen in that way by people that hear this for the first few times. So I want you to, everyone who believes that some form of lack has occurred to them in the past, some kind of trauma or some kind of lack of relationship or breakup or whatever it is, not getting the house you want, whatever it is, not becoming enlightened as you've been seeking for 20 years. And take that lack idea that frustrates you the most, perhaps, if you can find that one right now, and see how you believe lack actually did occur in that moment. You can pinpoint, well, there was an actual lack of me getting the house of desire. Or there was an actual lack of me feeling enlightened. Or it was an actual lack of that person desiring to be with me. And re-see that. Redefining simply means see it from a different alternate point of view of existence. In other words, that person that did not want to be with you, that only meant an abundance of space for yourself. Not having to share your bed. Not having to share your house. It meant an abundance of not having to waste your data plan on texting. It meant an abundance of spacious recognition available to you of what is always already here. The freedom, the heart, the presence, the isn't. It meant an abundance of notes being expressed through a vibratory pattern, through the mouth, through the throat of that other person saying, no, I don't want to be with you. That was a dance. That was an orchestration of vibrations right there, even if it's only seemingly lasted for 5 seconds. The sentence, no, I'm so sorry, but I don't feel like being with you. That was an abundance of vibration right there. There is, in every moment, there's an abundance of something. And so you can start to see how actually those experiences that you believe contained actual lack, how they actually contained an abundance of that much more. And the thing that was lacking is not actually lacking. It just wasn't the right thing for you at the moment.
Yes.
And if you start trusting in it that way, and you start seeing the abundance in everything, including failure and disaster and being taken away, things being taken away from you, your car being stolen, your relationship ending, your partner dying, there is a great abundance of something, of infinite things, really, and you start to notice this more and more. You become more apt at seeing it this way. You free yourself up from suffering, literally, because suffering is only caused by believing lack exists, and it never exists. And why does it not feel good to believe lack exists? It's because it's not true.
I love
because
that.
It's
say
out
that
of vibrational alignment.
Say that
it's
again.
So simple.
That's one of the things I remember you saying when you were here in Pueblo that I thought was so clear, is that if it's not true, it doesn't feel good.
Exactly. And that's the human mechanism. That's the compass we have all inbuilt, is the feeling compass. We have greatly abused and misunderstood the emotional body. The emotional body is only meant, originally speaking, ideally speaking, in an ideal universe, the emotional body is only there for you to be able to tune into whether something is true for you or not. We have called it by many names, jealousy, anger, we've made all these patterns, but really they're all coming from the basic misassumption of what the emotional body is used for. And so to be fully personal doesn't mean to be personal in the way that we know it. To be fully intimately individual means to actually have a completely clear and clarified emotional body that just lets you know, and you're aware of this, when something does not align for you, and when something does. And lack is an idea that is in vibrational misalignment with higher self frequency, or the point of view that is lack, that sees lack, is very much out of vibrational alignment with the point of view of your higher self or your true consciousness. And so that's the only reason it feels bad. When you feel bad, what you feel is the distance you place between your personal vibration and the true vibration. You feel that gap. That was what feels like the emptiness, like the disaster, like the depression. It's literally the vibrational distance between what you believe and what is true from a higher point of view. So if you start to lessen that distortion, lessen that distance between your personal vibratory experience and belief system and conviction and how you see life, and it starts to become more closely aligned to how existence sees itself, you start to see as existence sees. You start to experience as your higher self experiences. And then there is no more psychological suffering. Unless it's really relevant for you, or unless there's still an unconscious belief that is now being purged to the surface for you to transform as well and be even more blissful, even more ecstatic, even more unlocked in your frequency field, etc. So if it doesn't feel good, it must not be true. Now, we have to take this honestly and not just go like, oh, it doesn't feel good for me to be kind to you right now, so let me just slap you in the face. That feels much better. Because I'm angry, it feels better to slap you in the face, so it must be true. Don't take it in that way, obviously.
Yeah, because that's not true either. If I slap you in the face, there's this feeling of satisfaction that is not the same as true happiness.
Exactly.
It's not the same. And it doesn't, yeah, it's just not the same. It's an arrogant self-satisfaction, not happiness.
Exactly. Yes, thank you. Exactly.
Yeah. And what I've decided to do is to ask no more questions since I have none. So whenever we come to a pause, I'll just be quiet until you start talking again.
Okay. So what happens when our energy becomes more in alignment and we start to see more as existences, we start to see and experience and feel and taste and smell the abundance that is the vibration that is endless, that is infinitely here and now already. When we become more in that state, when we see more as that, then everything starts to accelerate in our personal lives, in the manifestation of our circumstances. Because the circumstances are just a reflection of what we believe in, what we're convinced of, how we see life, from what vibrational point of view we experience and view and interpret the phenomena that we call the illusion of consciousness, the illusion of life, the play of life. And so what happens is that life accelerates. Changes start to occur. So don't fear these changes when they happen, because they're actually, when things move out of your existence, just define that as more abundance coming your way. Just define that as more space being yours. Just define that and understand that this actually means that something that's in closer alignment to who you are right now and what's relevant for you to learn and explore and express and be right now is coming into view. Now, in that brief moment between your alt reality disappearing, between that alt reality disappearing and before the new one becomes fully visible to you, those moments are purposefully placed there by your higher self to teach faith, to learn faith, to learn the vibration of trust, to transcend the personal self idea. Because you're forced to sort of be in this space of nothingness or in this space of, well, nothing seems to be going my way. My wife left me, my husband left me, my career got destroyed, I am homeless, da da da. And you don't yet see the grandness of your next slideshow, the next potential parallel reality that's coming into view. So in that moment, what you're asked to hold on to in that sense or to go for is faith, total faith that your quote unquote higher self or life or the universe or the one, whatever you want to call or however you want to refer to that, which is all that is taking care of this. It's being taken care of. You deserve it. You are a creature of infinite worth. And there's no better place to really explore the nitty gritty beliefs you have about being unworthy in that limbo state between your old reality disappearing or seemingly lacking to the human mind, things you desire lacking, and the next thing not yet being in view, even though it's like right there on the very edge of your horizon, but it's not visible yet. You cannot, your mind cannot yet say, look at this reality, it's amazing. I have exactly what I desire. I have exactly what's relevant for me to continue my exploration and my expansion of consciousness and my learning and my being a beacon of ever greater alignment with love, light. And so in that limbo state, it's a perfect state for your fears to come up, for your lingering lack beliefs that caused the old reality to begin with, to come up, to become conscious, and for you to not grasp for fear and lack, but to actually hold the candle of light, to hold the candle or the sun, the bright star sun of abundance in the face of that lack belief in the limbo state coming up for you. And that is faith, to trust, to know that there is infinite worth, there is infinite abundance, and you are on your path, and you made the right choice. And to have faith that all things, the hows and the whens of creation, will come about effortlessly for you. And every time you strengthen that in the limbo state, or as some people call it, the down, the ups and the downs, or the valley experience, as I call it, the peak and the valley experience, the limbo state, where nothing seems to really happen anymore, or the bliss that you experience starts to disappear, or the acceleration and everything going so well for you starts to stop for a period of time. This is all to reconnect you to those deeper aspects of yourself. Trust, faith, oneness, unity, love, light, not needing anything. It's a great darkness in between two light scenarios within which to explore and uproot all these ideas so that really you can be the light even in the darkness. And you can feel the bliss you would feel in your ideal reality even without your ideal reality being enlightened yet or lighted up yet. Does that make sense?
So back to the very first question that I asked, which was after I asked your personal story, I said that I remembered a time when you would ask people, you know, what do you desire and why aren't you doing that? So, so what I hear now after hearing so much context is that, you know, depending on the person, there's two possible answers. One is that in saying, what do you desire and why aren't you doing that? They begin to look at their belief in lack.
Yes.
And others see that what they want to desire is really pure and that only guilt or fear is holding them back and they should just go.
Beautiful, yes. Go. You have full permission, full universal permission to be yourself because that's what you designed yourself to be here and now. You did not design yourself. You are this infinitely, like I cannot explain how I see this because it's nothing that we can draw on a piece of paper. But the closest that it gets to being described is something of a crystal-like nature. Like imagine an amazing chandelier full with crystals and lights and bright and shiny and powerful and potent and unique, all holding, being sort of this universal intersection that holds the potential of all that is within its own field. It's inseparable from the all that isness. Beyond the physical shell, this is how I experience people. And so, this is what you are in my experience. This is what I am. This is what every individuation is. Every individuation of all that is holds within itself the frequency, the vibration, the potential for all that is. It is literally a nexus point, an intersection, a node of expressing all that is in a particular way, but backed up with all that is, supported by unconditional love and pure light and wisdom and love and freedom and awareness and unity and all that. All these different facets of the one. And so we are not designed to put such brilliance into a little shell. And by the shell right now, I don't mean the physical body. I mean the mental shell of conditioning, of social conditioning. I mean the shell of negative limiting beliefs. We are not designed to be prevented, to be stopped, to doubt, to hesitate at every turn. We are designed to be flowers, free, soaring creatures that just go for it, go for it, go for it, go for it, and are completely inseparably supported by all that is, all the time, already free of sin, already forgiven, already accepted, already even desired into existence. We are bright, brilliant chandeliers of infinite love and light. And so let's act like that. Let's go for it. Why are you not doing what you want to be doing? Why are you not expressing yourself in the way you want to be expressing yourself? Why do you not see life in the way that existence sees life? Why hold on to these human ideas that don't serve you anymore? We are here to transform, especially those that are conscious of this, such as you and I, and such as the people listening. We are here at this particular time to bring something non-human into humanity so that humanity can fully unlock its potential. Something transcendent to that sociological, social, collective conditioning, so that we can break free from that and truly shine as we're meant to shine. We are beings of this universe. We are not human beings. We are beings of this universe. We just wear a shell. We just carry some genes around. So what? Big deal. That doesn't make us a human being. We are beings. We are infinite, endless beings of existence, of the cosmos. We are equal to every other civilization out there. We are equal to every other light being out there. We are in potential all that is itself. We are gods. And so we are meant to be more flawless in our expression and to show this planet what that is like, to be an example of that, to be inspirational in that sense. But we can only be inspirational if we become something other than what humans think human beings are or what humanity thinks it means to be human. What it means to be human, we have no idea of this yet as a collective. We have not seen any proof or evidence of it yet to the extent that it can be. The human being holds so much more potential to be actually human But in order to really, really anchor this in and become this free chandelier-like crystalline explosion of uniqueness backed up by inseparability, in order for that to be completely evolved here on this planet, we need to bring something otherworldly almost into this society's mind. And that can only be done through example, through inspiration, and through sharing, and leaving them be as they are, meaning that we appreciate and respect their free will. By there, I just mean anyone that has interest in any of this. But we express ourselves as freely as we can, first and foremost. We focus on ourselves, freeing up ourselves, and then we will naturally leave this comet's trail of debris consisting of nuggets of wisdom and joy and love and light for everyone else to follow and make their own, and then create their own comet-like path, trail through the cosmos, through this universe. We are meant to be so much more than we pretend to be.
I think we have a question. Let me read this to you. It says, what are a few ideas or methods of turning positively toward adversity to capitalize on potential? Perhaps some examples from your own life.
Can you rephrase that question or restate it?
Let me read it again and see. If not, then we'll have her type it differently. Here's the question. What are a few ideas or methods of turning positively toward adversity to capitalize on potential? So the way I hear that is, how do I look at that which I have perceived as bad in my life, adversity? How do I look at that differently in order to capitalize on whatever potential there is present for me now? And then she says, perhaps you have some examples from your own life.
Beautiful. Let's see. Well, the most profound way, in my experience, that works all across the board is this idea of transforming lack into seeing abundance. And by abundance, again, I don't mean like a full bank account, whatever that means. By abundance, I mean that there's an abundance of everything in this moment. There's an abundance of space, an abundance of oxygen, an abundance of trillions of molecules dancing on the vibration of unconditional love and bliss. It's just all happening right now. There's an abundance of opportunity. There's an abundance of possibility. You are never stuck in a scenario. You can always make a change. You can always choose to act in greater alignment with your true self. You are never stuck. You are never lacking anything. That's the idea. That's the main key method for unlocking our potential and capitalizing in that sense, as she said, on the opportunities of this moment, the infinite possibilities of this moment, is to really see that lack is a man-made idea that feels out of alignment with the obvious, overwhelming truth that everything is abundantly here and now. Examples from my own life are every day, like this experience, every experience. There is no longer a single experience that stands out. This becomes a continuous flow of transformation, of greater expansion. So it's almost redundant to name an example. But let's see if I can come up with something that stands out in this moment. Well, I can just use general examples as well, like anything, like death of a loved one, shall we say. Let's say a loved one dies. One way to look at it is, oh my God, I'm lacking their presence right now. A, which is not true at all. They're just, the physical shell is not within the present framework that you're choosing to experience out of all the dots that already exist in the same now. So it's not even true on a physical level either. It's still here. The experience you had with her or him 10 days ago before they died is still existent right now and can be tuned into and can be experienced as real as the physical appearance you're experiencing now. So even on the most crystallized physical level where it seems so obvious that you're lacking their presence, even on that level it's not fundamentally true. But I understand it's harder to tune into that and believe that than to think along the lines of, well, at least their spirit is able to be with me or commune with me. I can tune into their spirit, which is fine, which is great, and that is true as well. So for example, we can go from... one of the examples I use in my upcoming academy is... Let's say you're just sitting in a train and there's a highway next to the train that you're on and the train's going by. And at some point you witness this terrible accident. Mind the word terrible. This terrible accident, two cars clashing into each other, they fly over each other, they explode, all that. And the first response that comes up to you, being human as you are, which is natural, or at least conditioned, naturally conditioned, the response is, oh my God. like there's a moment of shock. You don't even know what to think because this triggers so many unconscious beliefs that you have and meanings you've given to certain ideas. And the experience you have ranges from, oh, that's so horrible for them. I hope they didn't burn alive painfully. I hope that their parents are, you know, find some solace somewhere, find some comfort somewhere. Yeah, what about their loved ones? What about, oh my God, there was a kid in that car. That's even more terrible. There was a kid that died in that car. That's crazy. That's, oh, why God? God does not exist because this would never be allowed to happen. Da, 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 da. All these ideas are fired up, none of which are true. None of which are actually more relevant or compassionate than any other idea. So let's say that you were raised on a planet in a civilization where it was this great thing, this theme of this entire civilization was to celebrate death by creating the most spectacular car crash you could ever come up with. So everyone in that society lived, like from an early age onwards, stories were told of great legends that were able to cause quadruple explosions with a single car and kill themselves in the most spectacular ways. And you were like, oh my God, these people are heroes. One day when I feel ready, I can take my car and just run into anyone else and they'd be honored to die with me in that explosive scenario. If genuinely this was a civilization that thought of death in a completely different way, meaning that this physical life is just a temporary expression and it's not built from the non-physical expression of ourselves, there is no separation between these. This is just one projection of our consciousness, and we can go out with a bang. What is greater than to go out with a bang? Who would want to die slowly and painfully and achingly and not being able to do what they want to do, which is idolized in this society? Oh, I hope I die of old age. Boring. To anyone of this civilization, it'd be amazing to car crash spectacularly and be talked about for centuries. All right, now bring yourself back to that scenario, and this car crash happens, and you're like, what? You're excited. You're like, whoa. And then you remind yourself, oh, wait, there is human beings in this train as well. They don't necessarily see it the way I see it. I might respect their points of view and not completely go, yay, that's amazing. I'm so happy for these beings that just liberated themselves from the physical projection, spectacularly so, into the spirit expanded perspective, which is way more real anyway. This is like a dream to them that disappeared. So, yay, I'm so happy that they are set free and that they died so spectacularly, causing such a show, causing so many ripples in the field for others to experience and be triggered by and be inspired by. Same car crash, completely different result. One is experienced from a point of view of lack, which does not feel good because it's not true. It's out of alignment. The other is a perspective which is equally as true or valid as any other perspective, including man-made perspectives. However, the vibration behind those perspectives are more in alignment with some of the principal fundamental truths of existence, which your higher self knows about and vibrates to you all the time. That's why it feels good to believe that something beautiful just happened. That is the truth. A car crash is a beautiful experience. It is chosen by those that were involved in it, whether consciously or from a higher consciousness point of view. Nothing ever happens to you without your full being's consent. So A, there's nothing to feel victimized by for them or for yourself. You see, it's totally up to their free choice to go out with a bang. They did. They caused expansion for all beings involved. They expanded upon infinity in new ways. They allowed others to be inspired, and death doesn't exist. Yeah. That alternate civilization has all these beliefs as its background, and the vibration that holds these thoughts is in closer alignment with the higher self's truth. That's why somebody from that civilization witnessing the same car crash feels way better than we do, because we are way more out of alignment in our perspectives. And here's the terrible thing. Terrible. We believe that we actually think we actually have the truth when it comes to these things. Yeah. Something terrible just happened. A baby died in a car crash. That's awesome. That is a terrible thing. And if I am allowed to be happy about that, that makes me a sinful person.
Yes.
And we have all these ideas. This is just one extreme example, but this goes on all the time. We keep each other small. We idolize the human mind, the human collective mind's definitions, and all of it is just out of alignment.
Yeah, so, you know, that was an excellent, excellent story. I might even, you know, share it someday, but I'll give you credit. But it's an excellent story for showing just how deep our conditioning goes. You know, I think that there are certain things that people recognize are conditioning, and there are other things they do not think is conditioning because, as you pointed out, they think it's true. Another thing that you've now said twice, which I just want to highlight, because I think if people left here with nothing but this, it would be incredibly helpful. And that is how you're talking about the, for lack of better words, I'm going to say the emotional body is actually a guidance system.
Yes.
You know, that, and that we can really tune into that guidance system. And so if I am starting to feel stressed or jealous, yes, or fearful or angry or unworthy, you know, my guidance system is telling me right now I am drifting off away from truth. Probably
exactly,
through my beliefs, through my conditioning. And what I can,
yes,
do if I want to is quickly look at what,
yes,
am I thinking, where am I drifting, and I can reverse it as quickly as I want to.
Beautiful.
Likewise, when I'm feeling joyous, peace, at ease, happy, I'm in alignment, and I can just relax, yes, and flow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in a very palpable way, like if a loved one dies, and I think most of us have experienced a loved one dying, whether it's a grandma or a partner or a child. If a loved one dies, this is just one example, but apply this all across the board of your life. Does it feel good, whatever you're thinking about it? Like when you think, oh, I am liking them, they are liking me, this is terrible. Does that feel good?
No.
If your emotional body does not feel happy at the thought, oh, this is terrible, or I am liking that person, then that is an indication that that thought is not in vibrational alignment with the truth of existence.
Yeah.
Now try to fake it till you make it for a second, because I understand being so socially conditioned, thinking in a new line of light may feel like you're faking it. But once you start to actually taste the energy that comes from that thought,
yeah,
that alignment, it starts to become more real, and then it becomes easier to actually believe it, and then it becomes even more real. And then you start to really play with definitions and perspectives, and you see that all perspectives are equally valid. There is no absolute truth other than the fact that all points of view are equally true. Now choose the one that is in greatest alignment with the resonance or the truth of your particular higher self's being, which is the ones that feel good. So now with the same death, start thinking in a different way. Start feeling or thinking, well, they are free right now. They are free in the spirit realm. They are free to choose whatever they want to experience next. Their higher being chose this experience because it's relevant for them. This particular life was no longer of use for their soul's evolution. I am completely connected on spirit level with them. My spirit is playing with their spirit as we speak. And start to see, even if that's not what you previously believed in, even if it feels slightly fake, start dabbling your toe in it, and then your foot, and then your leg, and then your whole body, your whole being. And you'll see that one point of view feels much better. Why? Not because you're being sinful by thinking in those ways, other than society thinks, but because that thought has at its core a vibration that is in closer resonance with the truth of your existence.
Yeah.
And so start playing back and forth. Go to the negative thought that makes you feel bad. Go to the positive thought that makes you feel good. And start seeing how your emotional body is an immediate guidance system to show you whether or not your belief is recommended by your higher self or not recommended by your higher self. If it feels good, it's recommended. It aids in the acceleration of your expansion. It allows you to share even more love and light,
yeah,
contrary to the idea that if we suffer for everybody, then we can share more love and light because we are respectful of their boundaries. No, love and light is shared only when we're in alignment, more and more.
Yeah.
So give yourself permission.
Yeah, it's simple. It's really simple.
Yes.
And I appreciate simplicity. We are, we'll have 2 minutes left. So, first of all, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. Although I said I've been watching you for years, it's not all of the time. You know, I tune in sometimes and sometimes I don't. But every single time I tune in, I get yes, very large yeses. And I'm very, very grateful for you being, I'm going to call it brave enough to listen to yourself.
Thank you.
Well, I also know, I know that people tried very much to discourage you, and you didn't stop, and I appreciate that very much. I'm grateful.
Thanks, Sweetie.
And
appreciate the recognition.
Yeah. And I appreciate that you came here tonight to share, because some of the things that you said, they've been said here. I won't say they haven't been said here, but they have been said in a completely different way. And I know that your way of saying them are going to perk some ears that maybe were not perked before in other ways of saying them. Also, they're not said frequently here. Although they've been said, it's not the most common talk that happens here. And so I think it's magnificent that you came here and shared. And I hope that we have the opportunity to join with you again, whether it's here in this room or One of the things we are looking at doing is building a retreat center here in the Pueblo area. That may take some time, but then it won't be far for you to come from where you're
at. Oh, no.
Yeah. Now, of course, I know you have the website. It finally arrived. I watched for it for, it felt like, months. But BentinoMassaro.com finally arrived. B-E-N.
It's actually old by now. We're going to redo
it's
it.
It's old by now.
After we finish the academy.
Okay. So,
but yeah, it is there.
Yeah, BentinoMassaro.com. Did I do that correct?
You did.
Okay, what about, are there any other websites or any other places where people should look? YouTube, lots and lots of you on YouTube.
I would mostly just recommend two things at this time.
Okay.
One, if you add to that URL you just said, www.bentinomassaro.com,
yeah,
if you add /academy,
okay,
there's a little teaser page that just shares frequently asked questions about what the academy is, which is what I'm working on. It's an online school for awakening and deepening and expansion that has a strong community side to it. And I think it's going to really help a lot of people to have this be laid out step by step by step by step by step in what I perceive to be the most effective way that I can think of or that I have experienced, and with the support of other people there and study groups and all that. So I highly recommend people go to BentinoMassaro.com/academy. And just sign up for that newsletter there, and we'll send you a newsletter. We'll send you an email when the academy is live, and you can check it out. And there's also going to be a 21-day free trial if you're not sure, so you can dabble in it and see if it's something that you enjoy. And it's all inclusive. It's got everything there. It has 70 to 100% discount on my retreats. If you're a member of the academy, I will want to sort of like make it more unified and a streamlined experience for people that's affordable, but it contains everything and allows us to do the projects that we want to do. And other than that, in the meantime, every Monday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Mountain Time, so that would be from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time, U.S. Eastern Time, I give meetings in Boulder, Colorado, and those are usually live streamed. So people can go to BentinoMassaroLife.com. And so tomorrow is the next one, and I'll be live streaming that from 7 to 9 p.m. So you can tune in, and that's free too.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me just check one more time. Any last words? Let's see. Will you do other online talks like this in the future where we can join in and ask questions? So
as part of the academy, I will do at least 3 or 4 3-hour workshops a year where those that have familiarized themselves somewhat with my teaching, so we don't have to cover the same ground over and over again, can actually like all come together there and ask me questions from that basis of understanding already. So those are going to be pretty powerful, I feel, and enjoyable for me, so I don't have to repeat the same things verbally. It's all written down in the academy. You can go through it step by step, get to those understandings, and then whatever questions or refinements are desired in you, you can ask them in those like 3 or 4 at least workshops a year. And live streaming also allows for questions, although it's not as direct. We usually get the questions and then we print it out for the next session, and then I tend to answer them. And we have a Facebook group. If you search on Facebook for Bentinho Massaro Community and Teaching, you can request to join, and an admin will accept you in. There's lots of people there that also are familiar with this message and other teachings, and they are very supportive. You can ask questions there. I answer there sometimes, and then there's my Facebook page, which you can also use.
All right, and then, of course, your retreats when you have them, right? Your live retreats.
Yes, which will approximately be three a year, and I'm going to do longer ones. So I'm going to do less retreats but make them longer, like more residential in nature, like 8 or 10 days, something like that.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah.
Keep following your heart.
Thanks, sweetie. I will. There's no other option anymore. So, yeah.
All right.
Whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
As a result.
All right. Well, thank you. And
thank you as well.
Can you tell everyone there I said hello?
I will.
And
I will.
All right. Bye.
Thanks, love. Bye.
All right, everyone. Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed that. I saw that there was a little bit of trouble with the sound. Of course, I've recorded it here, so that's the recording I'll make available for posting because it won't have any in or out on it. And I know that some people went to the radio. You're probably still listening. I hear the sound there was good. I just hope that you all heard everything that I heard while Bentino was speaking, because it was magnificent. And that's it. I'll release the mic for 25 minutes. And I'll be back in 25 minutes to look at the quote for the day, which happens to be a Bentino quote. Maybe we can look at it now that we have listened to what he had to say. Maybe it will cause us to look at the quote a little differently. We'll find out. All right. See you all soon. Bye-bye.